Maybe just say your name, and then you can share your question.
My name is Iris. My question was about, you talked a lot about self-knowledge, and for someone who would be on that path, what would you say would be like the first tools or direction you would give to a person seeking to know more about themselves?
Well, there is no, I would say there is no first starting point for self-knowledge. They are just the basic things, of course. The first basic thing in self-knowledge is to be aware that you're a creative being. Okay, I call this metaphysical humility. The knowledge that you are not a god, that you have a nature. You okay with that? Because many people are not okay with that. We deny nature nowadays. The modern world wants your whims to be realized. They don't want you to have a story. They don't want you to have parents. They don't want you to have a family. They don't want you to have a memory, a country. They don't want you to have a nature. They want you like Sartre wanted, like de Beauvoir wanted, like Nietzsche wanted. It's just a will. You know what I mean? So you are humble if you're aware that you are, first of all, a created being. And you have to contemplate this creation. You have to discover the great things that are in yourself. And the first great thing that you have is that you are. And that you are, there are principles of human nature inside yourself, and you must respect those principles if you want to achieve self-realization. This is basic, we call this metaphysical humility, awareness of your createdness. Second aspect is awareness of your sinfulness, so awareness that there is in you a tendency towards evil, something that Jean-Jacques Rousseau denied. All the naturalistic people deny the idea of sinfulness of human nature. They say there is only one sin, which is a social sin. So you have to be realistic and be aware that there is only you. In you there are good things and there are things that are not so good. And then the third thing is awareness of your dignity, and you have to contemplate that dignity. You have to be awareness of your freedom. You have to acknowledge your freedom, your responsibility, all the great things that you have, your dignity of a daughter of God. Then you have the fourth step, I call this psychological humility, which is awareness of your talents, of what you can do. So to understand what are your talents, a very important thing is feedback analysis. Try many different things in life, especially at your age. Try different things and try to understand how people react to that. Is this you or is not you? Are you a pianist or are you a businesswoman? There is a big difference here. Are you a sportswoman or are you a designer? You have to discover really the specific gift of yours. And for this, you need to listen to people. And you must not be afraid of asking people, is it good or is it mediocre? Is it small or is it great? Is this me or it's not me? You see, of course, it's the role of parents, fundamentally, if they love their children, to be capable of telling their children, that's you, that's not you. So that the child, since he's very young, he begins to understand his weakness, his strength, and he begins to understand that this strength are something that he has received, and he must be able to speak about those strengths with naturalness, because it's a gift to him, and he's responsible of that gift. So the feedback analysis. You see, the feedback analysis. When I was teaching at Helsinki University, who came to me and told me, Alex, stop being a lawyer and speak more about those things? They were my students. I listened to them. You follow me? I listened to them. Listen to people, and you will discover what are your strengths. Feedback analysis. When you were very young, it's very hard to know your strength because you have little experience, you've done little things. You have not done many things in life. So what I say my students all the time, try different things. Don't be afraid. Don't do what Papa wants you to do, you know, or Mama. Have passions for many things and try different things. And then you will discover really what's the thing that you have to do because it fits you. It's your strength. It's your personal power. Okay? Try things and listen to people. Ask for feedback if they don't give it to you.
Thank you very much. Next question. All right.
My name is Patrick. I really like what you said about smashing the rock to get a diamond. How or what, I guess practically, can we do to reach that diamond in someone?
By breaking it. You have to break it. And what did that mean for Michelin? Put the guy to the test. Make him do things that he has never done before, because he himself doesn't know himself. Help him. So this is what I was telling your friend. It's that you have to do things you've probably never done before in order to discover the diamond that is hidden inside. If you just follow the track and do what your friends, your fathers, your parents have done before, probably you will never discover who you are. You know, the parents of Marius Mignol lived with him for 17 years. In 17 years, they did not know who that guy was, their son. After 2 months working with Michelin, Marius knew who he was. You follow me? It's not simple. No, it's not simple. I would lie if it was simple. It's not simple, but the attitude is put the guy to the test, make him do things he has never done. He doesn't even know that he can do those things. We will help him, first of all, discover who he is. The thing with Michelin is not that Michelin wants to know who is that guy, is that Michelin wants, first of all, that guy to discover who he is. Okay, so it's not anything, but you have to try different things that you like and then make a little study about all those things. There must be action there. That's right. There must be action. There must be training. There must be observation. There must be tests. That's right. If you stay home sitting on a chair, nothing will happen. You will not get to know the diamond that is hidden in you. Need to move. But I repeat, move according to move with this idea that it's not movement for movement. It's movement in order to get to know yourself better. Don't become the workaholic or the activist guy who is moving. No, you're moving to get to understand who you are, what is your strength, and what are the things that you can do well. That's it. Other question? There are people behind
you. Yeah, there's a question here.
There were questions behind you. Okay.
Is there a question here?
Or we still have time. We have time.
Oh yeah, we have time. Okay, I got the super long cord here, so I can go anywhere.
So I just wanted to pick up on your last point about moving, and sorry, Andrew. Yes, thank you. You talked a lot about community. Knowing your parents, knowing what they gave to you, knowing what your grandparents gave you, having a sense of that as you contemplate what your mission is and what you're called to. A lot of us living in this world today, especially many of us, I think probably in this room, feel that to be successful, you need to move all the time. You need to be sort of itinerant. You need to experience the world. You need to travel constantly. And as someone who travels a lot, and you also yourself travel a lot, what's the importance of rootedness? What's the importance of being in a community and being rooted in order to be a good leader?
Well, there is no leadership without rootedness. Self-knowledge has to do with your roots. Totally, 100%. I had the chance to be a lot with my grandparents. All of them have suffered a lot. Suffered the revolution, a lot of blood, a lot of dead around. Each one of them had a story to tell me. And I spent a lot of time with them. I listened to them a lot. I was rooted in their lives. Their lives is a part of my life. They live in me until now. They are speaking to me now. All the four of my grandparents, I've known them. And they're very different people. They had a very hard story to tell. But I know their story. And I can tell 1 hour about the story of each one of them. So I'm rooted. I'm rooted in a tradition, in different traditions, I'm written the personal history of many people who love me, with whom I spend time, and I saw greatness in those people. And when I grew up, I began to see people that were coming out of the blue, you know, the Man Without Chest of C.S. Lewis, the creatures of Brave New World, people without past, without family, without tradition, without nation, without nature. And it was worried. It was shocked because I compare. I was rooted in something and I saw what was coming. And I was shocked and was afraid. And out of that, in a way or another, came my mission in life, to ignite hearts for greatness. So rootedness is so important. That's why I tell my students, write about all those people that have been around you, what they have given to you. They are still living in you. You are not an individual. You are a person. They are living in you. You've received from them. You are them. You follow me. For an individualistic culture, it's unthinkable. Because individualistic culture tells you are just yourself. But people who think they are just themselves cannot be happy. Because I would be frightened to think that I am just myself. Because that would mean I am a nobody. I have no memory. I have no history. I have no community. I am nothing. I would be frightened just to go outside in the street. I would feel I'm just a number there. When you're rooted, you are very strong. You're not afraid of anything because you know perfectly to whom you belong. You understand me? You have no fear at all. You know your dignity. You know what's your mission. You understand that you are a part of a whole. And this whole is your strength. And this whole is history. You are a history being with a memory. And you're carrying this. And it's not heavy at all. On the opposite, it's freedom. Rootedness is freedom. You follow me? That's a very good question you ask, because the modern world goes against this. So much individualism around that we deny all that which is your personal history, because they say that personal history is a burden, when in fact that personal history, the history of people who have been with you, it's not a burden, it's freedom. It's absolute freedom, the freedom of understanding that you're not alone. Follow me. This is, of course, for French people, rootedness, there is a French, Simone Weil, wrote that beautiful book, L'Enracinement. She speaks a lot about those things. She foresaw, just before the Second World War, that those people without roots that were coming, were showing up. She was frightened. And that's the big problem for many people. We have to investigate. We have to write. We have to ask questions. We have to write those stories that are, in the end of the day, a part of your personal story, the story of others that have had a strong influence on you.
So we have time for one last question, which I saw here at the front.
Hi, my name is Edward. And when we were talking about, I think it was Iris's question, about the type of feedback you're getting, and the most recent question about individuality, I was like, one of the biggest things when I was thinking about innovators and entrepreneurs, a lot of those people, they end up getting negative feedback first, and they keep pushing against the odds despite that negative feedback. So I'm kind of just like, in terms of leadership and me deciding on what I want to do for the future, am I supposed to like take that negative feedback, or should I ignore it? Am I viewing it as spite? Or is it just, I guess it's like, am I focusing on being optimistic? Or is it...
Okay, I understand Roy's question. First, you have to be sure that those people who give you this negative feedback love you. Because not everybody loves you, obviously. Because when you don't like people, you can tell whatever you want, especially if you have envy. So you have to be sure this is not envy, first of all. And so you have to get to know the people who are giving you this feedback. When I'm telling you, you have to ask feedback. You have to ask feedback from people who love you, not from those who are not interested in you, first of all. And then you have to go on doing your job. You have to go on moving forward and doing the things that you can, because you have talents. You cannot just think it's impossible. You cannot think everything I do, people say it's bad. No, there is no. It's impossible. It cannot be like this. So you have to be sure that you are asking to the right people that all those things you do are bad. You have to be sure about that. So you have to be optimistically minded and think that it cannot be like this. There is a problem here. Or maybe I'm not doing the right things. I'm doing something else. I'm not in the good direction. I'm doing things that have nothing to do with who I am. And then you think a little bit of that and you make a decision. Okay, but before finishing, I wanted you pronounce a very important word there, which was the word success. I want to finish with this. Virtuous leadership normally brings success. Why? Because it makes you a very efficient person, or I would say effective person. The more you develop your virtues, the more you become capable of doing things, because you are prudent, which means the capacity to make the right decisions, because you have courage to stay the course, you have courage to be audacious, to take risks. You have the capacity to communicate and communicate with people through the virtue of justice. You have self-mastery, which means that you can direct your passions and emotions and you don't become a slave of your passions and emotions. On the opposite, you use the energy of passions and emotions and you put this energy in your mission. Incredible strength. So virtue gives you a capacity to do a lot of things, and people without those virtues cannot do those things. But this gives you the capacity in normal life, in ordinary life, to achieve success in your profession, because this is an incredible asset for professional life, those virtues, in family life also, and in social life. So virtue gives you the strength, the power. Virtus means power, to do many things that can help you achieve a certain success in your life. But success very often depends on things that do not depend on you. Chance, a specific environment. Many times you have a war. You have a revolution. You will be beheaded. Like the great Thomas More, for being virtuous and magnanimous. You will be crucified, like Solzhenitsyn, like Jérôme Lejeune. You'll be burned at the stake, like Joan of Arc. Is there success? No, you cannot say it's a success. It's not human success. But in the end of the day, people will remember you forever. And they will follow your example. There are millions of books written about Joan of Arc. There are thousands of books written about Thomas More. So success is something that does not depend 100% on you. It depends on many different things. So you have to know it's not something you have to look at any price. It's not something you have to look for at any price. There are values that are higher than success. You follow me? So success is not a word for a Christian. It means nothing. Nothing. You become an effective person through your virtues. And this helps you to achieve a certain efficiency and effectiveness. But success is not a word for you. It's not a word. Because in a world which is cruel, in the world of ideology in which we live today, if you practice what I told you, you probably will be killed. I gave a talk at the U.S. Navy War College in America in Rhode Island a year ago, an admiral stood up and asked me, what's going to happen to me if I do what you're telling us, Alexander? And I told him, well, you'll be probably in jail in 5 years. Well, this guy was very happy. Of course, he's a soldier. A soldier is happy to be in jail for his ideas. But this can happen to us. When there is a revolution, when there is an ideology in power, who are the people we want to behead? The first, the magnanimous ones. Obviously, they look for those people, and they kill them all. All of them. And who is left? The small ones. They are not dangerous. They have no dreams. They have no missions. They are not a threat. That's what happens when you have a revolution. The French one, the Bolshevik one. You need a lot of generations after that to rebuild the country, because the best people have been killed. All of them. All of them. Not just a few. All of them. You follow me? So you must not be afraid. You must not think, well, I want to achieve success. For you, success in a world which is cruel, in a world of ideology, fundamentally can mean I have to be aware that I can be beheaded. And I must not be afraid of that. This is my success. I want to be true to myself. I want to be great. I want to speak the truth. I want goodness. I want beauty. And I'm ready to die for that. If not, there is no. It's not the successful life. For a Christian, at least, it's very clear it's not a successful life. I hope you got my point. That virtuous leadership not always means a beautiful, peaceful, happy, and rich life. And very often it means exactly the opposite. And if you know that, you will be peaceful. Thank you very much, guys. We're happy to be with you.